Hey, good morning, Mike Causey. Welcome to your turn. Glad to have you with us today. And we've got an all-star lineup. The show may not be a particularly fun one for you, but you're going to be learning an awful lot about the variety of proposals that are coming from the White House, from the Republican members of the House, and even from some Democrats in Congress that would do some pretty awful things to the federal workforce. There's so many, you need a scorecard to keep track of them. And later on in the show, we'll be talking with Steve Watkins. He's editor of the Federal Times. Sean Riley, a senior correspondent for the Federal Times, and they have some good insights on this and the latest. And my first guest is Dan Adcock. He is legislative director of the National Active and Retired Federal Employees, and Dan has been around the government for many, many years. He worked for NARF, left and went to work in the executive branch, came back to NARF. They decided they couldn't do without him, and now he's looking out for things for people who are working for the government, who are still active, as well as for their huge retiree group. Dan, are you with us?
I am. Good morning, Mike.
Hey, thank you for being. I know you guys are really, really busy, and you have some things going on today, and then this afternoon you have a conference, I believe.
Right.
Got a conference call talking about this. Dan, in the first place, there's so much going on. I called one of your colleagues in another organization, a lobbyist that I talk to a lot, to sort of find out what's going on. And I talked to him this morning, and his first words were, when I got him on the phone, he said, "What's happening? I can't keep track of all of it." So if he's in trouble, I know that I am in trouble. And one of the things that I know NARF members and people who maybe ought to be NARF members are looking at is this proposal that would increase the employee contribution to the federal retirement fund, and in effect, it would produce a take-home pay cut of between 5 and 6%. How does that work? What's the rationale for it, and where did it come from?
Well, the rationale from it it came out of an organization called Third Way. It's a nonprofit group that, you know, portrays itself as a middle of the road think tank. And I think it was mainly pitched as a deficit reduction item. And their concept was that, well, let's we're looking at what the first contribution is, for retirement. And, we think instead it should be half of the normal cost of the retirement system. And so, this thing took on a life of its own. It was included in the Fiscal Commission report, and then, of course, now it's been included in the budget resolution passed by the House. And then we learned through Lori Montgomery's article in the Washington Post on Sunday, no less the lead article on the front page, that what would happen, it appears that this is something that the administration is warming up to, and specifically the vice president and all those who are currently negotiating at Blair House. I think there's obviously some big problems with the proposal. Not the least of which is that when you compare to the private sector, when you're talking about private sector defined benefit annuities or pensions, we know historically that the Department of Labor found a number of years ago that 97% of private sector firms in medium to large sized companies don't require their employees to contribute anything to their defined benefit annuities, and FERS workers at least contribute 0.8% of salary. And, you know, also this was done as part of the reason why that's at that level was done in consideration of the change from the older retirement system, the CSRS, Civil Service Retirement System, to FERS, in the old system, employees contribute 7% of their salary. With FERS, what's happening is that FERS employees are still taking that kind of hit in their paycheck. The difference is that instead of it all going to the Civil Service Retirement and Disability Retirement Fund, 6.2% instead is going to Social Security for FERS. FERS employees participate in Social Security. CSRS do not. And so that explains the difference between the Civil Service Retirement System contributions and the FERS contributions.
When I first heard about this, and we reported it last Friday, I thought that the increase was aimed at both retirement systems. But Vice President Biden even said the other day something about it was being considered, but for FERS employees only. Now, most people who are now working for the federal government are under the FERS retirement system.
Right.
These are people hired after the early 1980s. So under this proposal, their contribution would go from what to what? Well, 0.8% now, right?
It would go from about it would go from 0.8 to probably about 5.8%.
Okay, so it would go up 8, and then as
Mike,
you point out,
still with me?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
You know what? I am having trouble with my phone line. Is there any way that you could call me back on my, or I could either, if you could call me back on my cell?
Give us a number.
Yeah, I'm not hearing you at all. Can you call me back on my cell?
All right, what is that number? Okay, well, yeah, that's what we're going to do. We'll take a short break, be right back here on WFED, and get the phone straightened out.
Have you missed a key step in planning for your retirement? You may have. Studies show that at least 70% of people over age 65 will need long-term care services at some point in their lives. The Federal Long-Term Care Insurance Program offers a smart way to help protect your lifestyle and remain independent should you need long-term care services someday. Now through June 24th, the FELTIP is holding its first open season for new applicants since 2002. Learn more about this opportunity at ltcfeds.com.
Discover, connect, collaborate, secure. The i2 America's User Conference 2011 kicks off June 7th at the Crystal Gateway Marriott. i2 brings together top minds from defense, law enforcement, national security, and commercial sectors for 3 full days to help you accelerate your mission. Experience the latest innovations that have helped make our world safer for over 20 years. The i2 America's User Conference is the only place to share information and collaborate with hundreds of other i2 users. Register today at i2group.com.
There is a watchmaking standard that is revered around the world. That standard comes from Rolex. From clasp to bracelet to its unique watertight oyster case, a Rolex holds its value because it was intended to. Crafted from just 3 precious metals, platinum, steel, and gold, each defies the ordinary. Its steel, 904L, virtually indestructible and corrosion resistant, is incomparable. Its patented Everrose Gold, created in an exclusive foundry, will remain beautiful for life. Inside, a genuine Rolex movement is a product of superiority and remarkable testing. It is unrivaled. At Rolex, flawless standards create more than a watch. They create a value that was meant to endure. For a complete selection of Rolex timepieces, visit your official Rolex jeweler.
See what a new watch can say about you at Tourneau, the world's largest watch store since 1900. Tourneau, the fashion center at Pentagon City, Arlington.
Government personnel must continue to achieve mission-critical objectives no matter their work environment. Video conferencing technologies provide a highly effective collaboration solution for federal employees affected by budget cuts, BRAC initiatives, and telework mandates, if they are secure based on open standards and deployable in limited bandwidth environments. Polycom is the first video provider to have an ultimate HD portfolio that is JITC certified, offering real-time face-to-face communication without compromising secure networks or consuming excessive bandwidth. Polycom enables government customers to collaborate over voice and video anywhere, anytime, securely both inside and outside the firewall, offering high-definition video calls at half the bandwidth of other companies. To learn more, visit polycom.com/federal.
The Telework Center arms you with all the information you need to know about teleworking in the federal government. Go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword Polycom.
Attention employees of the intelligence community and Department of Defense. Right now, you could be eligible for affordable term life insurance from GEBA, the Government Employees Benefit Association, with coverage issued by Prudential. Learn more about this important benefit for government employees at GEBA.com or call 1-800-826-1126. Group term life coverage for GEBA is issued by the Prudential Insurance Company of America, 751 Broad Street, Newark, New Jersey, 07102, contract series 83500.
The FedCloud blog on federalnewsradio.com takes a look at the issues surrounding cloud computing through the eyes of those who are using it every day. We'll share with you the challenges, opportunities, and lessons learned from some of the top minds in the world of federal IT. Collaborate with others and help shape the discussion on cloud computing at the FedCloud blog on federalnewsradio.com or follow the FedCloud blog on Twitter. The FedCloud blog is sponsored by Cisco and Intel.
Welcome back. back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. I'm talking with Dan Adcock. He's legislative director of the National Active and Retired Federal Employees Association. We had a little phone glitch there. Dan, are you back with us?
Yeah, I'm back.
Great. Okay.
Sorry about that, Mike.
No, that's okay. The question I was asking was if this proposal to increase employee contributions to the retirement system, it's now looking as if it will be directed only at the FERS retirement system, and I say only advisedly because FERS covers about 80% of the people, I assume, that are working for the federal government right now. So it's a huge chunk. It would be amount to a 5% take-home pay decrease for them, and that would be permanent, and there wouldn't be any improvement in benefits. And this came out of, interesting, the Deficit Reduction Committee, the fiscal committee that's set up by President Obama. So many of their ideas are going to be borrowed by various members of Congress, by the Gang of Six on the Hill, which I guess now with the defection of Senator Coburn is the Gang of Five.
Right.
But they're different groups looking at ways to cut government costs, and they really are concentrating on the federal family, federal workers and federal retirees. In all of your years, have you seen anything like this, Dan, coming down the road?
Not as bad as this. I mean, I think the only thing that compares is what went on during the 80s and 90s and, with the loss of about $50 billion worth of retiree COLAs back then, the Grand Redmond Hollings Law that eliminated the COLA in 1985. But I think that what's worse now is we're in a recession and people are out of work. And so when outfits like the Cato Institute or the Heritage Foundation put out a report that federal employees are overpaid, during these kind of difficult economic times, those were kind of reports, and that kind of demonization of federal workers picks up traction.
Well, it was picked up by the Washington Times, picked it up, the Wall Street Journal. USA Today has run at least three that I know of front page stories in that vein, that federal workers are either overpaid compared to their counterparts in the private sector, they're overpaid compared to the average American. And I always tell people, without being a cheerleader for the feds, is that Uncle Sam doesn't do retail. There are no Walmart greeters working in the government, and the government is a much more highly professional and administrative operation than your average private sector company.
Right. That's absolutely right. More educated, more professionals and managers. People stay longer careers because they care about their country and the service that they do. And the other thing that happens, and while these are apples and oranges comparisons, is that, for instance, you look at an attorney in the private sector, and maybe they write wills and do real estate law, and you compare that same attorney doing billion-dollar litigation for the Justice Department, and there's no comparison in terms of the compensation levels. But those are the type of comparisons that are made that show why, the work that Heritage and Cato has done is faulty.
Well, that was pointed out to me in the Army many times, is that the responsibility that people have at a very young age. You can be a three-striper, a buck sergeant in charge of a motor pool that's a multi-million or even billion-dollar operation at age 23. So the heavy responsibility comes early in the government.
Right.
Dan, there's so many things happening here, so many proposals, and one of them, I think people want to know if this increase in the FERS retirement contribution comes about. I guess it could come about in several ways. It could be standalone legislation. It could be part of this raising the debt limit, which apparently it is now. So this could happen rather quickly, couldn't it?
It could. I doubt that it would come as a freestanding legislation. I think it will be part of whatever budget deal is worked out, and that would be contingent on members of Congress voting for the debt limit. I mean, I think the timetable we're looking at right now is that on Monday, Secretary Gartner was forced to start doing some creative accounting with the Civil Service Retirement Disability Fund, the G Fund of the TSP, to avoid a government default. There's some other extraordinary measures that he can take. And so basically he'll be able to keep us out of going into default until about the first week in August, which just happens to coincide with the August Labor Day congressional recess. So I think that, Congress is like, members of Congress are kind of like college students in that they put off writing their term paper before the night it's due. And so I suspect that, it's obviously it's possible that there may be some deal between now and then, but it could very well be that deal is not reached until it really has to be, right before
Geithner runs out of options at Treasury and right before the August Labor Day recess, and there'll be a deal and then they'll move forward. But until then, we're going to hear a lot more about these kind of proposals. And unfortunately, you know, what the reality is right now is that feds are taking a disproportionate hit. We saw at the during the Easter and Passover recess that members of Congress were getting huge pushback on the Medicare proposal that was in the House budget resolution to turn to privatize Medicare and then index the government's share using a consumer price index, and therefore shifting a huge amount of costs onto Medicare beneficiaries. And because the program serves 40 million Americans and is very popular, members of Congress are taking they understand that that's the path of most resistance, and so instead now they're targeting programs that have much smaller constituencies and are less popular, with the case of the federal government, the demonization of federal workers, and some of these studies that we've already talked about, that unfortunately were becoming the low-hanging fruit. And I know from talking to our members that they are very much in support of shared sacrifice. They're willing to do their part, but not if it means they're being singled out. And that's unfortunately the way it's unfolding right now.
Well, and federal retirees have not had a cost of living adjustment, a COLA, for the past 2 years, and federal workers have been under a pay freeze since January of last year. It'll be January
right.
of this year. And there is talk, serious talk, I think, on the Hill of extending that another year or another 2 years or even another 3 years to make it a five-year freeze.
Right. That's what's in the budget resolution that was passed by the House, is to extend it to a five-year freeze. And, you know, that brings up, Mike, that brings up an important point about going back to this proposal to significantly increase worker contributions for FERS, and that is that not only are they essentially being taxed by additional 5% of salary for no increase in their benefits, they're being asked to make this contribution for a smaller retirement benefit because of the fact that your annuity is based on your salary, your average highest 3 years of salary. If you have a pay freeze, that means that your future annuity is going to be less than if your pay had gone up. And so basically the bottom line, they're going to have to pay more for a smaller retirement.
Well, you know, these things are so fast moving and they're coming so furiously. A couple of weeks ago, the nightmare du jour of federal workers, they had already taken knowing they're going to have a two-year pay freeze. But the thing people were worried about is this proposal, which comes up every year, but this being a tough year, seems to have more legs, is this proposal to change the retirement formula from basing the annuity on length of service and the average higher 3 years salary.
Right.
That would change it to your length of service and your high five salary. And that was worrying a lot of feds, and many people were wondering if they would have time to get out, if they would have ample warning time, and if they were eligible to retire, if they could get out. What do you think about that? What do you tell people when they ask you that?
Well, first, people should know that the high five proposal was not in the House's budget resolution. We're not hearing any discussion of it right now from the negotiations out of Blair House. But of course, you know, they're playing it very close to the vest as to what's in and what's out. I mean, we just got this little trickle on the increase in employee contribution to the retirement fund. But obviously, all these things are on the table. You know, it could very well be part of the mix. I would hope that if the high five proposal got legs and was included in some of these packages, that it wouldn't be done retroactively. There would be a date certain, you know, whether it would be the date of enactment of the legislation, that federal workers would have the opportunity to get out. But I guess one of the things I want to urge your listeners is that do not make a retirement decision based on the threat of this particular proposal. That would be a mistake. If people want to retire for other reasons, that's fine. But if I were a federal worker, I wouldn't be basing my retirement decision on the possibility of this proposal. And I do think there would be time for people to make plans to retire if, in fact, this proposal is included in a larger package. And certainly people who are NARF members will be made well aware of any of this activity, because we do a good job of keeping our members informed about these type of proposals.
And they can, even if you're not a member, there's certain information that's available to people. It's www.narfe.org, and you can get a lot of information off the page there. But for purposes of disclosure, I am a NARF member, so I get everything you put out. But
that's right.
But even non-members can get some things. You know, you make a good point there about don't retire in anticipation of this thing for that sole reason. And I'm getting a lot of emails from people. In fact, that Friday column, we got over 80 public comments, which is very unusual. A lot of people will send an email, a private email, to me, but for them to post this publicly, they felt so strongly about it. But a lot of people want us to do a survey and see if people are, what they're going to do if this appears to be, if it appears to be imminent. Are people going to retire to beat it, or are they just going to stick it out? And it's not a bad idea, but I would say the same thing to people. Just because some of the people, or many of the people, or all of the people in your office are going to retire if this happens, doesn't mean it's right for you to retire, correct?
Right, that's right.
I mean, this is in addition to it being still out there in the ether, even if it happens, it's still a financial decision you have to weigh.
Right. Well, and I think, you know, when I, just my casual conversations with, you know, colleagues and friends that are federal workers over the weekend, we just saw this article in the Post about the administration being interested in requiring FERS employees to contribute more to their retirement. I think that, you know, as this process moves forward and we hear more and more about different proposals going out, I think it really has a huge demoralizing effect on federal workers. And there's a lot of people that just have, you know, they've had it, and this becomes the straw that broke the camel's back. And I really believe that it has the possibility of making the brain drain that we're currently experiencing, because 60% of the federal workforce is eligible to retire in the next 5 years, that it's going to make that brain drain that much worse, as people are so unhappy with their public service being discredited by these proposals, and also the anti-federal worker sentiment we're seeing on Capitol Hill.
Yeah, that's true. People have been predicting the brain since 1999, and it really hasn't materialized. But this could jumpstart it, because you do have this tremendous buildup. As you say, 6 out of every 10 people are eligible to retire within the next 5 years. So maybe be a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Right.
Okay, Dan, anything else you want to bring to people's attention? I mean, there's so much going on.
Yeah, I mean, I think the other thing that we're very concerned about is, again, this is a proposal that was part of the Fiscal Commission's report, and that is to index the government's share of federal workers and annuitants' federal employee health benefits program premiums. Right now, federal workers and retirees pay roughly about 30% of the premium, and so if there's a $10 monthly increase in premiums, the government pays $7 of that increase, and employees and retirees pay $3 of that increase. But what this proposal would do is it would cap the government contribution, so it wouldn't grow any faster than the percentage growth in the gross domestic product plus 1%, and historically that has risen at a much slower pace and healthcare inflation. So every year, federal employees and retirees would lose ground. This year they would pay 30%, the next year it would be 34%. And we've done a projection in-house here at NARF that within an 8-year period, the share that employees and retirees would pay would jump from about 30% to 54% of the premium. And I think that's one of the things that really keeps us up at night, is one of the worst proposals that's out there right now that could find its way into a budget deal.
That's true, because you can have a year, as we've had two now, where the retirees don't get a cost of living adjustment because inflation is low, but that doesn't include medical inflation, which is
right.
catastrophic. So you're saying in 8 years it could go up to their share fit to 54% of whatever the premium is. And I guess this also would have the effect of driving people into lower premium plans, lower cost
plans. It could, or just leaving the program, you know, not even, you know, I think especially when you're talking about people who are on the lower end of the wage scale, that premiums just would become unaffordable and they would have to become uninsured, which, you know, would be a tragedy.
Not a good thing. Thank you, Dan Adcock, and we'll get you back on here, and I hope we have better news next time. If you'll stay tuned, we're going to take a short break here, and then we'll come back talking with Steve Watkins and Sean Riley from the Federal Times.
old were you when you stopped playing? Chances are it didn't happen overnight. As you grew up, information got elevated, imagination got downgraded. We stopped playing and started stressing. Kaiser Permanente encourages you to follow your kid's lead and put some play back in your day. It's as natural and necessary as sleep. Physically, play boosts immune function, lowers blood pressure and cholesterol. And what it does for your emotional and mental health is pure refreshment. Toss a ball around and see how it lightens your mood. Notice how a hand of cards changes your outlook. Jump rope and watch your creativity soar. Best of all, play keeps you young, like no pill, no program, no procedure can. So take that kayak lesson you've been putting off. Learn a new song on the piano. The truth is, the day you stop playing is the day you start aging. Kaiser Permanente. Thrive. Learn more at kp.org/thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
The ComSatCom report, provided by Hughes.
It doesn't take a disaster or cyber attack to knock out a terrestrial communications network. One simple construction error or backhoe cut can do it. A diverse path satellite backup solution to a primary landline network is essential to ensure continuity of operations, or COOP, to keep defense networks running no matter the situation. National programs must have a COOP backup for terrestrial connections with inherent security functions to protect voice, video, and data transmissions. Hughes Defense Solutions meet U.S. TRANSEC and FIPS 140-2 Security Level 2 standards for secure global connectivity wherever your mission may take you. Hughes has the technology and experience to deliver the right COOP solutions on time and on budget.
To learn more about Hughes Defense Solutions and contract vehicles, visit today's complete ComSatCom report on federalnewsradio.com or visit Hughes on the web at defense.hughes.com.
How is the U.S. Citizens and Immigration Services enhancing its outreach and becoming more customer-centric? What is USCIS doing to ensure the integrity of the U.S. immigration system? And how is USCIS taking the immigration system into the 21st century? Join host Michael Keegan as he explores these questions and much more with Alejandro Mayorkas, Director of the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, on the next Business of Government Hour.
Please join Jim Fleisig May 24th at 12 noon for his monthly series, The Federal Executive Forum. This month's program will discuss secure cloud computing initiatives in the federal government. The panel includes government leaders from the GSA, DISA, and the Department of Energy. Don't miss the Federal Executive Forum Tuesday, May 24th at 12 noon, right here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. Sponsored by Lockheed Martin, SafeNet, and Red Hat.
The Federal Long-Term Care Insurance Program open season is here. Did you know that at least 70% of people over age 65 will need long-term care at some point in their lives? Long-term care services are expensive. You may need to rely on loved ones or pay for long-term care services out of your income or assets. Fortunately, the Federal Long-Term Care Insurance Program was designed to help protect against the high cost of care. Open season ends on June 24th. Visit ltcfeds.com to learn more today.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
The Census Bureau is experimenting with ways to collect data using the Internet. The Bureau didn't use online data collection for the 2010 census, but officials say they're already getting responses via the Internet for their ongoing American Community Survey. By the end of the year, they expect 1 million people to have responded to the ACS online, and many people are using mobile devices to respond to the survey. The Bureau plans to use what they learned to plan online efforts for the full 2020 census.
General Dynamics Information Technology is dedicated to providing the latest, highest quality information technology services and resources to help organizations meet their mission objectives. Large-scale IT systems and communications networks are the strategic and operational heart of defense, intelligence, civilian government, and private business. They require the expertise of a company that delivers results. General Dynamics Information Technology and professional services. Go to GDIT.com to learn more. That's GDIT.com.
Welcome back to Your Turn. I'm Mike Causey, and we're talking about a variety of proposals that are aimed at really making life less attractive in the federal government. Some of them are downright horrendous if you're an employee. My guests on the phone now are Steve Watkins. He is editor of the Federal Times, and Sean Riley, a senior correspondent for the Federal Times. Gents, are you with us?
Sure am. We are. are.
Okay, glad to have you. Thank you for standing by. There's so much to talk about here. I don't know where to begin. Your lead story, one of your lead stories in the Federal Times this week, is talking about the proposal to increase the amount of money that federal workers under the FERS retirement system, and you say 4/5 of all working federal employees are under FERS, would have their retirement contributions go up dramatically. How would that work?
Well, basically, the way, as we understand it, and I think Dan Adcock kind of described it also pretty well, that basically the contribution that federal employees make currently to their FERS pension is 0.8%, very low figure, toward their pension, their FERS pension. And then something like a little more than 6% goes to Social Security and TSP. Actually, an additional amount goes to their as matching funds to TSPs. But what the proposal is, as I understand, is it would raise that contribution from 0.8% to 5.8% of employee salaries. So that would effectively be a 5% hit on federal employee salaries.
Well, you know, this shows is kind of the danger of making a deal and then thinking things are finished for all time. Because when they set up the FERS retirement program, and it was during the Reagan years, they said we're going to model it after the best private sector plan. The civil service benefit will not be as generous as it is under the old system. In fact, it'll be less than half of the benefit. But we're going to make it up. They'll have low contributions to the retirement system, and they'll get this 5% government match to their FERS contributions. And now, the of course, the people who did that are long gone, long out of public service, if not dead. And so now the rules are being changed again.
Yeah, that's right. And feds are understandably anxious and upset about that. And we'll see where this goes. It does look like it's getting a lot of focus in the budget deal talks. And that's one of the I think that's another kind of dimension of this that is sort of lost, and that is that, you know, this is all being done behind closed doors, basically. There are these budget negotiators being led by Vice President Biden to essentially hammer out a deal that will allow Congress to extend the debt ceiling. The deadline for that is August 2nd. The problem is that whatever ends up in that deal is basically a up or down kind of vote for Congress. So it's not as though along the way, like with a typical piece of legislation, it would generally be debated and there would be a vote on it as an amendment or as a piece of legislation, and people would be on the record for it. Whereas here, there's a lot less opportunity for folks like Dan Adcock and other unions and federal employee advocates to really work their efforts on the Hill and mitigate the problem.
So there will be horse trading, but relatively few people will be in on it, correct?
That's right. So whatever emerges, it's going to be a lot more difficult for anyone to tamper with.
Well, and also raising the borrowing limit, the can has been kicked down the road to around August 1st. So a lot of things, it's going to be a very long, hot summer for federal workers and people who follow them and who wish them well.
Yeah, exactly. And there's going to be all sorts of news. You guys did a great job breaking that story on Friday, and I think we're going to hear and see more cases like that of things that are likely to show up and get a lot of attention in these debt talks, some having to do with feds and some not. We saw also that, for instance, farm subsidies were getting a lot of focus. So But I think in terms of this, and we'll see. For instance, maybe the health, there may be some proposals affecting health premiums. We haven't heard that yet. Dan alluded to that, and we'll certainly keep an eye on that. It's something that's come up as part of the Simpson-Bowles Commission. And it may come up here as well.
Well, I know, and you and I have talked about this before. We've been around the block numerous times, but most of these proposals, or many of them, have been made before, and they've just come out as these are ideas of this is how you could save money without any serious traction. But given the campaign against federal workers over the last 2 years from the media or think tanks or wherever it's coming from, now some of this stuff is very real. A couple of years ago, if you'd said we're going to soon have a 2-year federal pay freeze, I would have laughed.
Yeah, and now, you know, it's, I think, quite feasible that it could be 3 years or even longer.
Yeah.
There are proposals to extend it to 5 years.
And as you say, this Blair House group, headed by Vice President Biden, is when they come out with their recommendations, it will be an up or down vote, and which I guess Congress will be delighted to have that responsibility taken away from them.
Well, they're still going to have to vote, and I, you know, this is a there's a lot of wild cards in this Congress. You know, we've already seen that a lot of members are not following their leaderships in lockstep. So it's even unpredictable once they emerge with some sort of deal, whether that'll even get the approval they need.
Well, you know, one thing that surprised me in your Federal Times story, the one written by Steve Losey, it was the mention of Vice President Biden and the fact that he, the Vice President, alluded to the FERS program, and he seemed to know the rules. So obviously they have been talking about this in some detail, and it's a very important part of the package.
Yeah, and so Steve was chasing down that question that we had of, you know, is this proposal affecting all feds or just FERS or what have you? And it turns out it is affecting only FERS. It's not going to affect the older feds under the older CSRS plan. And that's sort of understandable. I mean, there's very, you know, I think 4 out of 5 feds, if I have that right, are under FERS. So it's a pretty small population. They're going to be retiring in the next few years. So FERS is really where the lion's share of the savings is going to be.
Right, and they do pay much less now. You also have a piece here about legislation. This is a Democratic initiative to slow down the outsourcing and to bring federal jobs that were privatized under the Clinton administration and the Bush administration to bring them back into government. But how does that, I mean, it looks to me like that ship is moving in a different direction if they're seriously talking about cutting 155,000 jobs.
Yeah, to be honest, you know, you and I both have been covering this stuff for a long time, and you know, it's very easy to introduce a bill. It's extremely hard to get one passed. This bill has been introduced in the past. It hasn't gone forward, although its sponsors, Sarbanes from Maryland on the House side and Mikulski, Maryland on the Senate side, seem to think it may have some better odds. But from my perspective, I'd be surprised to see that happen if it didn't pass last year. I certainly don't see it having better odds passing this year. And you have, you know, bills on the other side. And a good example of that is there was a bill introduced just last month by Senators Duncan and Thune, two Republicans, Tennessee and South Dakota, that would do just the opposite. It would require the government to procure all of its services from the private sector that basically pass the Yellow Pages test, which is that if you can find it listed in the Yellow Pages, then you have to use a company to provide that service.
Yeah, it's funny the term inherently in governmental and whatnot. Need to take a short break here, talking with Steve Watkins and Sean Riley from the Federal Times. We'll be right back in a minute.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Eric.
So who's leaking the material from the Bin Laden raid? Former CIA Osama Bin Laden Unit Chief Michael Scheuer said on CNN, only a handful of well-known high-ranking intelligence officials have access to it. It's also especially ironic because several former intelligence officials say some members of the media were being scrutinized after being suspected of receiving classified information and legal action had been pursued. Some were asking for an investigation. I'm J.J. Green.
Estimates show that more than 20,000 airline crews
crew members clear security at our nation's airports each day. Since the beginning of this year, a unique group of 17,500 crew members from 61 different air carriers have been using the Airink Crew Pass service to test a new expedited screening process. This trial program at BWI, Pittsburgh, and Columbia, South Carolina uses three layers of secure data to positively identify each crew member in typically less than 8 seconds. Airink is focused on keeping you moving safely. For more information and career opportunities, log on to ARINC.com.
The Ballistic Missile Defense Report is provided by Raytheon.
In a recent Missile Defense Agency test, Raytheon's Army-Navy Transportable 2 radar, better known as the AN-TPY-2, supported the first launch-on-remote engagement of the SM-3 Block 1A against an intermediate-range ballistic missile. Located on Wake Island, the AN-TPY-2 supported the launch by detecting and tracking the target. This test demonstrates remote engagement capabilities of the system, a major milestone in the first phase of the Obama administration's phased adaptive approach for missile defense in Europe.
5 million hours of experience, 19 direct hit intercepts, unmatched engineering. Raytheon Standard Missile 3 is preserving freedom at home and around the world. Now Raytheon engineers are developing the next generation SM-3. When seconds matter and there's no margin for error, Raytheon Standard Missile 3 delivers. In fact, there's nothing standard about it. Raytheon, customer success is our mission.
Attention employees of the intelligence community and Department of Defense. Right now, you could be eligible for affordable term life insurance from GEBA, the Government Employees Benefit Association, with coverage issued by Prudential. Learn more about this important benefit for government employees at GEBA.com or call 1-800-826-1126. Group term life coverage for GEBA is issued by the Prudential Insurance Company of America, 751 Broad Street, Newark, New Jersey, 07102, contract series 83500.
In the beloved fairy tale Beauty and the Beast, Belle and the Beast learn that true beauty is found within and live happily ever after. Today, our happily ever afters are being threatened by the fact that nearly 1 in 3 children in America are overweight or obese. Now is the time to make good nutrition and physical activity part of your family's daily lifestyle. To learn more, visit letsmove.gov, brought to you by Let's Move, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and the Ad Council.
Don't miss the FPMI Human Capital Management Conference and Expo, June 13th through 16th in Tucson. After 22 years, FPMI's combined their Labor and Employee Relations Conference with their HR and EEO Conference to bring you one conference covering today's hot topics in the federal LR, ER, HR, and EEO fields. Over 70 sessions led by government leaders and industry experts. Join FPMI for 3 days of learning, networking, and exhibits. To register, visit fpmiconferences.com. That's fpmiconferences.com.
Discover, connect, collaborate, secure. The i2 America's User Conference 2011 kicks off June 7th at the Crystal Gateway Marriott. i2 brings together top minds from defense, law enforcement, national security, and commercial sectors for 3 full days to help you accelerate your mission. Experience the latest innovations that have helped make our world safer for over 20 years. The i2 America's User Conference is the only place to share information and collaborate with hundreds of other i2 users. Register today at i2group.com.
How will federal managers improve program performance within the tight budget environment? Find out from Agency Leaders at Excellence in Government, the premier best practices conference for federal managers, May 23rd at the Ronald Reagan Building. Early bird rates are available through April 29th. Don't miss the event that federal managers say best prepares them to excel. Register now at excel.gov.com.
Connect with Federal News Radio wherever you are. Like us on Facebook to see the hottest news stories on your wall. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/FedNewsRadio. Download our free iPhone app. Just go to the App Store and search for Federal News Radio. And now, connect to the radio station straight from your cell phone. Just call 712-432-6616. Go to federalnewsradio.com and search for social media for details.
Welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey, and a reminder that our shows are archived every session. So if you can't listen to work, or if you want to listen again at home, or tell a friend about it, it is archived on our homepage. And some of this bears repeating because it's very complicated stuff. I'm talking with Steve Watkins. He's editor of the Federal Times, and Sean Riley, a senior writer. So much going on. Before I get Sean, this news out of the Postal Service that the Postmaster General, I believe, testified yesterday. Now, and did I get this right, that they might not be able to meet their retirement obligations?
Yeah, that's basically correct. And this is something they've warned about repeatedly, but the volume of the warnings is getting amped up. Essentially, last week, the Postal Service announced it experienced a worse-than-expected second-quarter loss, about $2.2 billion. And you've got a couple of other factors converging. One is that they have a $15 billion line of credit from the Treasury Department, and they're going to probably hit that limit this year. And then on September 30th, they have to make a $5.5 billion legally required prepayment for retiree health insurance. And then saying the Postmaster General reiterated yesterday that they will not be able to make that payment. They're also, for the first time, suggesting they might have some trouble making a $1.2 billion reimbursement to the Labor Department due around the same time for workers' compensation.
So, and this is, as they say, not a drill. The numbers seem to be there, huh?
Given what they're saying, I agree. You're exactly right. It's not a drill, there are real concerns about whether they'll be able to make those payments. And the other question is, what happens if they don't? This issue arose 2 years ago when the Postal Service is also in danger of not making a similar prepayment for retiree health insurance, health benefits. Congress ultimately gave them a break at the last moment, but there was a question which never really got an answer about what would happen if they hadn't made it.
And is this something that's unique to the Postal Service? I mean, the Defense Department doesn't have to make prepayments for its retirees' pills, does it?
Or am I... Not to my knowledge. And as far as I know, yes, it is unique to the Postal Service. This is a requirement established under the Postal Accountability Enhancement Act of 5 years ago. And at that point, the Postal Service thought that they knew it would be tough to make this payment schedule, but they thought they could do it. Unfortunately, for the Postal Service, it was about that time that mail volume, and particularly first-class mail volume, started to nosedive.
You know, when they changed from the Post Office Department to the U.S. Postal Service, you know, it was billed as a quasi-federal agency that was going to be run in a business-like manner. And one of the cynical lobbyists at the time told me, he said, they're out to destroy the Postal Service. And he never specified who they were. I never quite figured it out. And he did not, of course, anticipate email and FedEx and these other places. But the Postal Service seems to be in very bad shape.
Yeah, and they don't seem to be getting much traction in terms of their efforts to address their financial crisis. They don't seem to be getting much traction in Congress. I thought it was interesting at yesterday's hearing. A lot of the hearing was dominated by questions from members of this Senate subcommittee about the Postal Service's efforts, desire to end most Saturday delivery, which would save about $3 billion a year. There are also objections to its plans to close more post offices, the bulk of which lose money. But at the same time, particularly in small towns, rural areas, considered community institutions, and as a result, members of Congress are resistant to closing them. So on the one hand, Congress wants the Postal Service to act like a business. On the other hand, Congress also wants to maintain a certain degree of control over how the Postal Service runs its business.
That's not unusual in the political world, is it, to demand one thing and then make it impossible to carry out the other?
But this is, I agree. This is one area, though, I think, for the Postal Service is unique.
Yeah. Yeah, it certainly is. Well, and the postmark is important to a lot of people. It's, as you said, it's a community center, a place where people go get their mail, but it's also a sense of identity. And when you go to Eastern area instead of Potomac, that makes some people unhappy.
Mm-hmm.
Jens, there's so much stuff going on here. Pay freeze, an extended pay freeze is possible. Diet cost of living adjustments for retirees in the future is possible. The change from the high three to the high five computation for retirement, although Dan Adcock said it hadn't been much heard of that lately, but that's still out there. This 5% increase in contributions for people under the FERS retirement system, and then this change in the system used to determine how much the government pays of the employee and retiree health premium versus how much the employee and retiree pays, and that's dramatic. Is not that this isn't enough, but is there anything else going on?
Well, yeah, there is, unfortunately, and kind of as I mentioned before, I think one of the particularly scary things about all this is that not all of these proposals even exist as legislation, but they, as you say, they are ideas that are out there that are simmering and just waiting for a good vehicle to latch onto. And a good example of that is chairman of the Government Oversight Committee in the House, Daryl Issa, has tried in the past to attach an amendment to the CR back when they were still trying to figure out the 2011 spending bill that would halt step increases. And as your readers and listeners know, the pay freeze that Obama and Congress has passed does affect the pay salaries. It halts any adjustment to those, but it does not halt step increases for feds. And so that is considered as kind of the last step towards a what Republicans are saying is a bona fide pay freeze for feds that they are still working on. So even though that's not introduced as legislation, it is an idea that's still out there, a proposal that's still out there, and just basically waiting to be attached to a bigger bill or possibly as part of the budget deal.
And from the standpoint of the budget cutters, it's a logical one, because if you're going to have a pay freeze, have a pay freeze. I remember when this idea was first floated, you guys came up with a figure as to how many people would be getting in grades within, was it a 1 or 2 year period?
Yeah, I think the figure, if I recall correctly, was something like $2.5 billion in all for step increases and bonuses and so forth. But I think that was over 2 years.
Yeah. Okay. This is just so interesting. And I need to. The Homeland Security has told us we're going to have a drill coming up in a couple of minutes. So if you hear sirens and all that sort of thing on the radio, it is a test only. This idea of putting retirees, certain retirees, on a diet cola, how would that work, and who would it affect? Would it be everybody, or would people be grandfathered in?
My understanding of that is it would affect basically people on FERS who get early COLAs, and that would apply to folks like law enforcement officers, firefighters, air traffic controllers, certain intelligence and DOD employees. But most FERS employees don't receive COLAs until they turn 62. So for those affected, basically what it would do is halt COLA increases until they turn 62, and then it would give them COLA increases retroactively calculated as if they had been getting them all along prior to turning age 62. Yeah. This is a proposal in the Simpson-Bowles plan, the President's White House Commission. I'm not aware of that being introduced yet as a piece of legislation, but again, that's another one of those ideas that's out there and simmering and waiting for a vehicle. In terms of whether it would be applied to just new employees, I don't believe so. I think that would affect all employees.
So it's another Freddy Krueger leaping out there in the dark. Just real quick, when I started working, it was not unusual for people to go to work for a company and work for maybe one or two companies at most for their entire career. That's changed a lot, and I think now the average person works for 5 or 6 companies before they retire. But given what the politicians, are doing to the government and want to do to the government, and then this one proposal to eliminate any civil service benefit for new hires, it seems to me that would sort of doom the government to being an employer of where people come in and out but don't develop any institutional memory.
Yeah, I think you're right. And Dan Atcock kind of alluded to this as well. It's all of this, I think, combined is a real morale bust.
Scary time. Well, listen, we'll do this again next week, and thank you for being on, and we escaped the test. But thank you, Steve Watkins and Sean Riley. We'll talk to you next week, and remember, the shows are archived. Have a good week.